I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Alyssa Block. This is On Point. Pain and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, it's born like this. Immaculate conception, I transform like this. For black musicians in America, it's been a huge week. We're listening to the song DNA from rapper Kendrick Lamar's album Damn, which won the Pulitzer Prize for Music on Monday. It's the first Pulitzer ever awarded for music that's not classical or jazz. Kendrick Lamar, just 30 years old, joining composers including Aaron Copland, Samuel Barber, and Ornette Coleman as Pulitzer winners. And that's not the only mega musical event of the week. People are calling it Beyoncé's powerhouse set at California's Coachella Music Festival, the stuff of pop music legend. So what does it all say about our musical moment? This hour on Point, a history-making week in music. You can join us on air or online. Are you a Kendrick Lamar fan? What does his historic win mean for hip-hop or for the Pulitzers? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York City is David Haidu. He's a music critic for The Nation and a 2018 Pulitzer Music juror. The jury unanimously selected Damn to win the 2018 Music Pulitzer Prize. David Haidu, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Melissa. I'm very happy to be here.
And David, take us inside those jury discussions.
Oh, I can't do that.
Oh, please. Please. Come on.
No, I'm not allowed to discuss the deliberations. That's never done. But if the question is, what were they thinking?
That is my question. What were they thinking, David?
I could tell you what I was thinking.
Okay, great.
We listened to over 180 pieces of music. It was a terrific jury. The constitution of the jury is public knowledge. It's David Lang, Paul Creamer from the Metropolitan Opera, Regina Carter, a violinist, Farrah Jasmine Griffin, a scholar. And we just picked the best piece of music. It's an extraordinarily pure process. We never discussed the biographies of any of the composers. We never discussed the performance history of any of the composers. Now I'm talking about things I wasn't supposed to talk about.
That's what happens when you get on Point. You never thought you'd say before.
None of that ever came on the table. It's not that we were prohibited. I don't know what's done in the past. It's just we never talked about any of that. We talked about 180 different pieces of music. There were probably a half dozen that were, I thought any one of us would have been fine with winning the Pulitzer mm-hmm. Prize. You know, they're all in that realm. This is Pulitzer worthy. That's Pulitzer worthy. And then at a point where you're talking about fine distinctions among great things.
Which could be very, very different kinds of music.
Right. Well, you know, we all applied, I think, essentially the same standards to all the work. We're listening to opera, we're listening to jazz, we're listening to classical music, we're listening to this. And we're looking for a high level of achievement and originality and innovation and just greatness. And we heard that in this piece of work.
Okay, well, let's listen to a bit more from Damn, the song Pride. It's the seventh track on the album. And what might have spoken to you about as Kendrick Lamar's greatness?
I can't. Hell raising, whale chasing, new worldly possessions. Flesh making, spirit breaking, which one would you listen? The better part, the human heart, you love them or dissect them. Happiness or flashiness, how do you serve the question? See, in the perfect world, I would be perfect world. I don't trust people enough beyond their surface world. I don't love people enough to put my faith in man. I put my faith in these.
Kendrick Lamar there saying, I put my faith in these lyrics. He's talking a lot about faith, also religious faith throughout these songs, David Haidu.
Right, which is not unusual in hip hop. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more religion, Christianity, and Islam in hip hop than a lot of people realize, and always has been. There has been since MC Hammer. But what do we hear here? We hear kind of really smart, sophisticated, hybrid quality. There's an elusive quality with an A. There's kind of references to R&B and musics of the past that in the music, and really smart, sophisticated language that works on multiple levels. that is just great hip-hop. It's great at what it is, in the same way that there was a string quartet that was a finalist by Michael Gilbertson. It was just like a masterpiece of a string quartet. It was like a glistening string quartet, as good as a string quartet could be. And this was just great hip-hop and great as hip-hop. And that's one of the things that spoke to us about it. I mean, I like To Pimp a Butterfly a lot too.
His earlier album, record. Kendrick Lamar's earlier album.
You know, and that's the one that, you know, I think some critics, you know, praise a little more highly, but then others praise damn more highly. And one of the distinctions is that part of To Pimp a Butterfly's greatness is that it sounds symphonic, or, you know, it suggests Western classical music. So, you know, it sounds like things that other kinds of things that we are widely recognized as great.
I want to read David Haidu from the Pulitzer's description in awarding Kendrick Lamar the Pulitzer for music. Here we go. I don't know if I can get this all out in one breath. A virtuosic song collection unified by its vernacular authenticity and rhythmic dynamism. I need a breath. That offers affecting vignettes capturing the complexity of modern African-American life. So there you go. Is this a turning point, David Haidu, before we let you go? A turning point, does it open the door to other genres for the Pulitzer music?
So.
You hope so.
I mean, yeah, I hope so. I mean, but there are also other kinds of music that are worthy of Pulitzers. Hank Williams got an honorary citation several years ago. It was a lovely way to recognize the value in country music. But, you know, when I saw that, I thought, well, how about Lucinda Williams? Or how about Dolly Parton? Wouldn't it be great to recognize the high achievement in country music today? Because, I mean, after all, the Pulitzers are an award for a current piece of work. They're not a lifetime achievement award. They're not an award for a body of work like the Nobel Prizes. They honor work, new work done this year for it and to recognize its greatness. And there's greatness in all sorts of other forms of music. I hope it doesn't mean some sort of turning point or diminuendo for hip hop.
Having sold out, if you win a Pulitzer, it's all downhill?
Yeah, well, I once asked Dave Van Ronk, the folk musician, what it meant that Joan Baez was on the cover of Time magazine in the early 1960s. He said, well, obviously it meant that she's all over. It's all over.
I think David Van Ronk was wrong, but.
Yeah, definitely. So, I hope it doesn't mean that, but it won't.
Okay.
It won't.
David Haidu, music critic for The Nation. He was on the jury that unanimously selected Kendrick Lamar's album, Damn, to win the 2018 Pulitzer Prize for Music. David, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And now let's turn to Rodney Carmichael. He's the hip-hop correspondent for NPR Music. He joins us from Washington. Rodney, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And joining me from New York City is Fridera Hadley. She's a writer and a professor of ethnomusicology at Oberlin College in Ohio. You can find a link to her article for Billboard on Beyoncé's Coachella set at our website, onpointradio.org. Fridera, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And Rodney, you first, when we were just hearing from David Haidu, he hopes this isn't the beginning of the end for hip-hop. I mean, he's being facetious there. But what is the reaction in the hip-hop world to this prize being awarded to Kendrick Lamar?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the reaction is very positive. I also think it's caused a lot of us to wonder, well, wow, what in the past hip hop wise has potentially been Pulitzer worthy, you know? And I think that's one of the questions that I've had is what are the criteria that were used? So it was interesting to hear you talk to David about some of that.
Mm-hmm. And Fridera Hadley, when you think about what sets Kendrick Lamar apart, is it the words? Is it what he's writing and saying? Is it the orchestration and the musicality? Is it all of the above? What makes it special for you?
I think the answer is D, all of the
above. Of the above.
But also, I think it is his willingness to consistently push himself. You know, a lot of my students, for instance, have been following him since the Overly Dedicated Section 80 mixtape days and on through. And it would have been really easy for him to try and do To Pimp a Butterfly Part 2. But that's not what he did. And so I feel like with Damn, he's reached... If Good Kid, Mad City was his first major label release and it was his takeoff, and then To Pimp a Butterfly was his acceleration and ascendancy, then Damn is a really nice cruising altitude for him, where it's not a complete departure, but it is, you can mark the growth in both his lyrical abilities and what he's thinking through musically. And the only comparison that I make really is a group like Outkast from the 1990s who were able to do similar kind of innovation within their own style.
Rodney, has Kendrick Lamar said anything now that he's won? Has he made a statement or talked to anybody about it publicly?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think he has. I know he hadn't a couple of days ago when, you know, everyone was trying to get comment. But in a lot of ways, I think that Kendrick has said so much about the album and said so much within the album that, you know, it's this mainstream part of American culture recognizing him, where the conversation seems to be new. You know, I would be curious to hear what he has to think about it. Yeah. But I think more people have been curious to just to see what mainstream getting on the bandwagon, what their thoughts are about the album. You know?
So as far as you know, no comment. Has there been reaction from others in the hip hop world, other musicians?
Not that I know of. I haven't noticed. Like I said, I think people have really been interested in what the jurors were thinking and what they had to say. I interviewed another one earlier this week, Farrah Griffin, the scholar, and so, yeah, that's been where a lot of the conversation has been.
Yeah, well, stay with us, Fridera and Rodney. We're discussing Kendrick Lamar's Pulitzer Prize for Music, and we'll be getting to Beyoncé's jaw-dropping Coachella set. The historic week it's been for black musicians overall. You can join the conversation. Maybe you want to talk about your favorite track on Damn, why you like it, how does it compare to Kendrick Lamar's other albums. We are at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, and we're going out with Loyalty from Kendrick Lamar's Damn. The song features the pop icon Rihanna. I'm Melissa Block, and this is On Point. You can meet me outside. You can babysit him when I leave him outside. Ain't no other love like the one I know. I done been down so long, lost so. I done came down so hard, I slow. I done sleep forever, all I real want. I said I'm geek and I'm fired up. All I want tonight is just get high. All I want is loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. 10-4, no switching sides. Feel something wrong. You acting shifty. You don't vibe with me no more. I need loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dell Technologies. Can technology reduce healthcare costs? What will it take to personalize the education of every student? And where does the media go from here? Find these answers and more on Trailblazers, a podcast hosted by best-selling author Walter Isaacson and joined by extraordinary guests who share their stories, insights, and the lessons they learned while transforming entire industries. Stream Trailblazers in your favorite podcast app or at delltechnologies.com/trailblazers.
Hi, I'm Mindy Thomas from NPR's Wow in the World, and this week it's all about Operation Earth, how to be cool to a planet that's getting hot. Check it out with the curious and conscientious kids in your life. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Melissa Block, and we're listening to Freedom from Beyoncé's 2016 album Lemonade. The song features the rapper Kendrick Lamar. Both artists had a big week. Lamar's album Damn won the Pulitzer Prize for Music, and Beyoncé performed a set at the Coachella Music Festival that already is going down as legendary. They're calling it Beachella. We're talking about Kendrick Lamar's win, Beyoncé's show, and the historic week in music. You can join the conversation. Were you at Coachella to see Beyoncé's set? If not, did you watch the live stream? What did you think? We are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests are Fridera Hadley, a professor of ethnomusicology at Oberlin College, and also Rodney Carmichael, NPR Music's hip-hop correspondent. And Rodney, let's start with you. You have mentioned that the song Feel is one of your favorite tracks from Kendrick Lamar's album. Let's take a listen and talk about it.
feel like you wanna screw and that's how I made it. Feel like I ain't feeling you all. Feel like removing myself, no feelings involved. I feel for you, I've been in the field for you. It's real for you, right? That I feel like ain't nobody praying for me. Ain't nobody praying for me. Ain't nobody praying for me. Ain't nobody praying.
Rodney Carmichael, talk a bit about the message you're hearing in this song and throughout Damn, the album.
Well, this album is so compelling and so, you know, he's such a tormented figure throughout this album. And, you know, he's struggling with his faith and what he feels like is a faithless society and a faithless time. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like he's really a modern day prophet. And you see him doing the work that prophets have always done throughout history, going all the way back to biblical times, which is a lot of times, you know, prophets usually weren't celebrated. A lot of times they were very tormented souls. And, you know, the assignment that they felt like had been heaped upon them was something that they struggled with a lot. And I think you hear a lot of that struggle in songs like Feel and really throughout the album.
Fredair, what about you? What themes are running through that really stand out for you throughout this album?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Rodney was saying. I think that at this point, I think Kendrick Lamar sits in the tension of two realities. I think he always knew that he would be this great and he would be this popular, but also grappling with the reality of what that means in his personal life to the people around him and all of the complexities that, you know, we can only imagine that come with that. And, you know, the possibly high standards he has for himself. And, you know, we look to other stars who have found different ways, productive and not, to grapple with that. And I think what he wants is to continue to... I think he grapples with ideas of being like a good person and a good man. And obviously, perhaps what he's least concerned with is being the best rapper, because I think he's pretty confident.
He doesn't need to worry about that. There are political themes running through here, too, though, aren't there? In one of the songs, he talks about Donald Trump being in office. We lost Barack, he said, and promised to never doubt him again. But is America honest or do we bask in sin? How much is that part of Kendrick Lamar's message? What's going on currently?
I think it's a huge part. I mean, I think that he's using himself and you know, the way that his lens on the world is such that I think he uses his own inner turmoil to reflect a lot of the outer turmoil that he sees going on. I think, when you think about the times that we're in kind of a state where everybody is very comfortable with pointing the finger outward. And so even when he talks and critiques from a political point of view, a lot of times he's doing it by trying to start with within, you know, and then kind of use that to kind of gauge or reflect or mirror what he sees going on a larger scale in society.
I'm really glad to say that we have a bunch of calls lined up here. David is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. David, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think as far as Kendrick Lamar winning the Pulitzer Prize, it's long overdue. Rodney had stated something earlier about what works of art had been missed along the way. My personal favorite growing up was Nas. I thought that Illmatic was something that could have won the Pulitzer Prize. And I think that what Kendrick has brought back to hip hop that's sorely missing right now is a sense of lyricism. And I think, with newer stuff that's come out, J. Cole released an album before that was Forest Hills. I thought that could have won a Pulitzer. And I think his next album that's coming out, KOD, is going to be something that the Pulitzer Committee needs to watch out for. But I just agree with everything that Rodney has been saying. I'm so excited for this. And I'm just so excited for what it can bring the hip hop in the future, and I want other artists to look at what Kendrick is doing and take an example of that and just move it forward.
David, thanks for your call. Sounds like you have some thoughts you'd like to direct to the Pulitzer jury with a vote for Nas and for J. Cole. Rodney Carmichael, do you see this as sort of the beginning of something that might lead further down this road of hip hop getting more mainstream recognition and accolades?
I mean, we've already seen the trend starting. If you look at last year alone, We saw major institutions that have never really paid attention to or honored hip-hop doing so. Jay-Z gets inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2017, first rapper ever. LL Cool J receives Kennedy Center honors, mm-hmm. first rapper ever, you know. And everybody every year gets louder and louder in their negative critiques of the Grammys. You know, the Recording Academy is supposed to have their finger on the pulse of the culture and continues to fail to do so. So to see an album that didn't win Album of the Year in the main category this year turn around and get a Pulitzer, I think, you know, it says a lot. And I'm sure the Recording Academy is kicking itself, you know, on some level.
Let's go back to the phones to New Orleans. Bill calling from New Orleans. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Hi, Melissa.
Sure.
I'm working here in the wood shop and had to put the tools down.
Be safe.
Yeah, indeed. So my point is that I have a difficult time recognizing the award as being for music, because I don't see a great deal of musicality in what he's done. I think that his lyrics are remarkable. I think he's more a poet than a musician, and his expression is, I mean, it's an evolution of music over time, but I can't see it as music. You know, if I look back over time and wonder about what might have been worthy of a Pulitzer in the past, one thing that jumps out to me is something like Joe's Garage by Frank Zappa.
Well, I wonder, Bill, if you would have, speaking about, you know, words versus music, would you have said the same thing about Bob Dylan, say? Who won the Nobel for literature? Right. I mean, he's known as a writer. Maybe not
somewhat, but if you took Dylan's lyrics away, it would be less attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you take Lamar's lyrics away, people you'd switch it off in 35 or 40 seconds.
Let me have Fredera Hadley respond to that. Fredera?
I'm grateful for the comment because I actually went back and looked at the Pulitzer's description of what they were looking for, just to really have that language in my head. And it says, distinguished musical composition by an American that has a first performance or recording during the year. I think that word composition is really important, and also performance. And I think when we're thinking about Damn as a body of work, I think you can't really separate the voice from what is happening in the track, what is happening musically. All of that is one seamless composition. It is as if, you know, you're talking about an opera and you want to remove the voice from Carmen or from, you know, another piece of work. They work in tandem. And so to break that holistic analysis of it is a mistake, quite honestly. Because Kendrick is thinking about how he uses his voice musically.
Yeah.
And so that's hugely significant.
Let's go to another call. Vince calling from Ellicottville, New York. Vince, welcome to the show.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me on. Great show. Just a quick comment. Preface it by saying I'm 61 years old, white, and discovered Kendrick Lamar through my son and started listening to the album. And just it's probably the album I listened to the most, probably since Dark Side of the Moon in the 70s.
Really? You're talking about Damn?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, Damn. Talking about Damn. I think the lyrics are intelligent. I mean, they're dense. I think there's something there everybody can relate to. Just a great album musically, too.
And what does your son think?
Same.
Yeah.
Same. I think his is, he really likes To Pimp a Butterfly, but, you know, I think we both agree a lot on the tracks we really like on Damn.
And apart from the lyrical denseness that you're talking about, what else appeals to you?
I think the music, like the layering of the music, the use of some of the background vocals, the moods that the songs go through and take you through. I mean, they kind of take you on a journey with the lyrics.
So you're hearing a lot there. Vince, thank you so much for calling with your thoughts on that. And let's go to another call. Hasham calling from Bath, Maine. Hasham, welcome.
Hi, how are you, Melissa?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Your guest. I find this a very interesting conversation, and I think I'd like to hear maybe what your guest would like to say or yourself. Kendrick sort of moves rap back to that initial turning point that we had in rap music. And his albums pretty much went through the sequence of where rap went through. Because Good Kid, Bad City was more about the personal story of people and partying and sort of the things we went through. The Pimp a Butterfly became a little bit more philosophical, but in Damn, he really started to bring the political message. And someone was talking about the composition of his music. That's one thing that Damn really, that Kendrick did with Damn. He exploited the art of production. So he brought in top people, you know, Top Dog, all these guys that he used to produce the music. But not only did he use the beats as part of his production, but he used his voice as part of the production. And that goes back to the Eric B. and Rakim's, EPMD, Redman, their voice and their ability for wordplay and to manipulate the vernacular from the street and also use it to where a more popular or mainstream American audience can understand is what just genius, I think, in his abilities. I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn, and I live in Maine now.
That's a little bit different, just a little. Hashan, thanks for your call and for asking those questions. And Rodney, I wonder if you'd like to respond. He mentioned he'd like to hear your thoughts on what he was saying about bringing hip-hop back to its roots.
Yeah, it sounds like we got a golden era lover, which, you know, I'm definitely not mad at. I think that a lot of those attributes that he's you know, commending Kendrick for, you can find in a lot of hip hop today. I think, you know, a lot of the musicality and the voice and using it as an instrument is probably one of the main things that you hear in a lot of rap that people dismiss nowadays. It might not necessarily be as lyrically focused or sound as a lot of the golden era MCs, but there's been no richer time in terms of artists, you know, using their dialects, especially Southern, when we think about trap music and using it as an instrument and in terms of the way they make it an instrument and compose within the layering of the tracks and that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely lyrically he's out of there, you know, but I think that there's still a very strong lyrical grounding in the music today too.
One final thought on Kendrick Lamar before we pivot to Beyonce and her show at Coachella. I was struck by something Doreen St. Felix said in her piece in The New Yorker. It'll be fun to hear how Lamar finesses a verse to include the word Pulitzer. So wait to hear if he manages to fold that in.
Agreed.
Okay, let's go to Coachella. Not physically, but unfortunately, but at least in audio form. Beyonce's top billed performance, a historic moment for the Coachella Music Festival last Saturday.
Coachella, thank you for allowing me to be the first Black woman to headline Coachella.
First Black woman to headline Coachella, Fridera Hadley, a huge moment?
Huge.
Huge. Why huge?
Let me just preface it by saying that I am a graduate, an alumna of two historically Black colleges, Florida A&M University and Clark Atlanta University. And so the traditions that she was drawing on were profound.
Okay, and, well, let's back up and explain that because...
Well, I was going to... Yeah,
okay. Because for those of us who were not lucky enough to catch the stream before it was taken down or to be at Coachella, explain what was going on stage when you're talking about HCBUs.
Well, it was historic on a couple of levels. One, Beyonce said she was the first Black woman to headline Coachella, belatedly so, although Coachella is not that old, and it was a specific kind of space that is constantly evolving, like all these festivals are. But still, she was the first Black woman to headline this festival. Mm-hmm. But not only, and you know, anytime Beyonce performs, we're expecting perfection. We're expecting something incredible, something really special. But what she chose to do and reimagining her entire stage show and performance through the lens of musical culture that develops and still exists on the campuses of these historically Black colleges was really, for me, you know, someone who grew up around that particular culture, was jaw-dropping. I just, and completely unexpected.
Like, and visually, what were we seeing?
visually, you saw a band on her stage made up of lots of graduates from different historically black colleges and high schools that modeled their marching bands after historically black colleges, as if they were at a basketball game with the dance team, or in the stands at a football game with the dancers in front of them. And you saw nuance. You saw each section, instrument section in that band with their own choreography, even when they weren't playing, throughout the show. Mm-hmm. And you saw the uniforms, you saw the choreography as they were playing, how they would move their drumsticks, how they would move their cymbals. And we've seen it before in things like Drumline and other uses of historically black college band traditions, but this was probably the most holistic recreation of that outside of the HBCU space.
We've been discussing the big week for black musicians and music in general. Beyoncé stunning the Coachella Music Festival, rapper Kendrick Lamar being the first ever hip-hop artist to take home a Pulitzer Prize for music. You can join the conversation. What did you think of the way Beyoncé used HBCU culture in her Coachella set? We are at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going out of this segment with All the Stars by Kendrick Lamar and SZA from the soundtrack to the movie Black Panther. I'm Melissa Block. This is On Point.
That's how you find out who you're dealing with. A smart percentage you I'm building with. I want the credit if I'm losing or I'm winning. On my mama, that's the real shit.
Let's talk about love.
Are you funnier than Fallon? More amusing than Aziz? More clever than Click and Clack? Well, if you've got an idea that'll make people laugh, enter WBUR's Next Great Show contest for a chance to get your show on the air. To find out more, go to WBUR.org/nextgreatshow.
This is On Point. I'm Melissa Block. We're listening to Love on Top from Beyoncé's 2011 album, 4. Beyoncé used the song to close her powerhouse set at the Coachella Music Festival over the weekend. And that wasn't the only major musical event this week. The rapper Kendrick Lamar's album, Damn, won the Pulitzer Prize for Music, the first album that was not jazz or classical to do so. We are at 1-800-423-8255. Join the conversation, 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joined again by our guests, Fridera Hadley, professor of ethnomusicology at Oberlin College, and Rodney Carmichael, NPR Music's hip-hop correspondent. Welcome back to you both.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
And I think we need to hear some more music from Coachella, Beachella, as it's becoming known. let's listen to a part of the set, almost a two-hour set, where she moved from Sorry, from her 2016 album Lemonade, into Me, Myself, and I, from her debut album Dangerously in Love.
I ain't sorry. No, hell no. Now you wanna say you're sorry. Now you wanna call me crying. I'm the one that's lying, and I don't feel bad about it. It's exactly what you get. Stop interrupting my grinding.
That's Beyoncé performing at Coachella. Fridera Hadley, talk more about what we were talking before the break about the references to historically black colleges and universities and sort of the themes that she's hitting in her stage performance here visually.
Sure. Visually, as I said, you know, you have the band on stage almost the entire time. And even when they're not sonically engaged with the performance. There's still often their presence is made known with the dancers. You know, she brings back choreography that we recognize from videos like Single Ladies, which was she brought in a choreographer who taught her about J-setting, which is a style of a dance of a dance team that exists at Jackson State University, another historically black college, and which has found life and been embraced by black LGBTQ communities as well. And so all those references come from HBCUs in general, but they also come from specific HBCUs. There's over 100 of these schools. And so throughout her performance, she's doing things that gives nods to specific regions of HBCUs. You know, the way she uses Rebirth Brass Bands, Do What You Wanna, that's a popular song with like Southern University in Baton Rouge, my alma mater FAMU in Tallahassee.
Shout out.
Shout out, gotta do it because my mama's listening and my daddy.
Hey, mom.
But at the end of the show, she does Love on Top, and she switches the groove from the record to a really strong go-go groove, which is a nod to what you might hear if you go to Howard Homecoming. Howard University is in Washington, D.C., and these schools constantly draw on the music from their communities when they're interpreting popular music song for their own performances. And she brought that nuance and that dynamism to her own performance.
Let's go to the phones. We have a call from Tripp in Nashville, Tennessee. Tripp, welcome.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling about the Beyonce performance. Within the first 5 minutes, I had just big goopy tears falling from my face, and
really,
my girlfriend was trying to tell her friends about my reaction to the performance, and I was trying to explain to her that it had so much more to do with the marching band aspect, because it took me back, if I may give a shout out to my my high school marching band, the Harding University High School Marching Rams of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Go Rams.
They were the first marching, or the I believe the only marching band from North Carolina to march in President Obama's inaugural parade, and they were very much represented in the Beyonce performance.
Were you in that marching band?
And I was not, but I did perform in Mr. Jones' jazz band and symphonic band. But,
well, if he's listening now, he's very proud. And you were brought to tears, which is such a powerful reaction to what you were saying. I'm curious, Fridera Hadley, you're mentioning all sorts of nuance in the references that Beyonce brought on stage. And there's a real question, I think, of who in the audience would have picked up on those. And I want to get to a reaction from Beyonce's mother, who posted on Instagram. So Coachella is a pretty white crowd. And she posted on Instagram that she was afraid that the audience would be confused, as she put it, by all of the black college culture. Here's what Tina Lawson wrote on Instagram, and I want to read this to you and see what you think. Beyonce's brave response to me made me feel ashamed. She said, I've worked very hard to get to the point where I have a true voice. I have a responsibility to do what's best for the world and not what is most popular. And she said she hoped her show would prompt young people to research this culture and would encourage young kids to enroll in our amazing historically black colleges and universities. Tina Lawson, Beyonce's mom, ends by saying, I stand corrected. It's quite a thing, but it is a real point of who would pick up on the nuances that you're seeing all the time.
Well, I think the genius of Beyonce is that you can go to her show and not know any of what I just said and still be wowed and amazed and totally enthralled with her performance. So it operates at multiple levels. But I've been thinking a lot about what she did with this show and with Debbie Allen's work on the 1990s sitcom A Different World, which was based around the fictitious HBCU Hillman College. And both pieces of work were A Different World was a really entertaining sitcom, whether you knew anything about HBCUs or not. Once Debbie Allen got involved, it was really funny. It was really provocative. The acting was great. The cast was great. All of that. The same is true of Beyonce. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still Beyonce. And so the performance itself, taking all of that knowledge away from it, is still something that is utterly captivating. But also, she has decided at, you know, sort of the height of her powers to use her voice to really point to these schools, which are usually woefully underfunded, but still responsible for producing the majority of our Black teachers, mm-hmm. our Black congresspeople, our engineers, our PhDs. HBCUs do more of that work, and the majority of Black students in this country do not go to historically Black colleges, right? And so not only does she do this performance, which, you know, is a love letter to HBCU culture and could possibly, which prompts us to talk about mm-hmm. it and may encourage students to research that as an educational choice, but then she doubles down on it the day after and announces that she's, you know, donating $100,000 in scholarship funds to private historically Black colleges, which tend to cost even more than the public HBCUs.
Yeah, yeah. Rodney Carmichael, your takeaway, your thoughts on Beyoncé's Coachella set.
Well, you know, I think, first off, it was amazing. And, you know, I can't wait to see what she does for week two. I hear it might get even more amazing.
So, she's doing another set at Coachella.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think a big irony around this conversation in terms of what's happening in the backdrop of Beyoncé's Coachella takeover and Kendrick's Pulitzer win is, you know, this is the same week all of this big stuff happened, and this is the same week that two Black men got arrested at a Starbucks simply for taking up space, you know. And I think it's just a reminder that in a lot of ways, I think America has always been in love with Black culture, but Black people, sometimes the country's politics and policing have reflected, you know, a fear or, you know, a feeling that's not necessarily the same level of love and embrace.
Yeah.
And I think that when we look at this rise that we feel happening in terms of black culture, you know, being embraced in the mainstream and how it parallels with what's happening in terms of Black bodies, you know, at the hands of police or what have you, it's a really interesting parallel that I think gets at the heart of America in a lot of ways.
And we have a caller, Dan, calling from Lexington, Kentucky, with some thoughts along these lines. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Melissa. Actually, and Rodney kind of stole my thunder on that this whole point, but I definitely don't begrudge him because he's going to be a much better speaker on the subject.
Don't undersell yourself.
It does strike me as such a harsh, harsh contrast to see it, as he says, in the same week. And honestly, it's going to be every single week that we live in America that this kind of stuff happens, that people get racially profiled and arrested for no good reason and shot in their own backyard. And so my question, and I would love to hear from your guests on this, is how do we translate, you know, white fans in America who adore and revere and pay money for Black celebrities, Black athletes, Black actors, Black musicians? How do we translate that level of attention and adoration into caring about regular African-American lives, which are not valued in this country at all?
That's a great question. Fridera Headley, you want to take that on?
Yeah, and I agree. That has been a challenge. You know, there was a quote that someone, or a statement that someone made, America loves Black music but doesn't love Black people. And so we find the history of Black music in this country is abstracting Black music from the Black community in which it exists. And so I think with people like Beyoncé and Colin Kaepernick, who are both like, listen, I understand that I've been endowed with this kind of power and with this kind of attention. I will not use that all up on myself. If you're going to shine that light on me, you are also going to shine it on this community from which I am still a part. And they have found very poignant ways of doing that. And so that kind of advocacy, and one, you know, we are at a point in which earlier generations of pop stars and athletes may not have been able to do it in the same ways, particularly on the music side, but found ways to try and navigate and say, hey, I understand that I'm a pop star. I'm thinking about people like Michael Jackson, who isn't often given enough credit for trying to navigate those same kind of spaces and bring his Blackness and his Black mm-hmm. community along with him. And so the fact that Beyoncé did this, and it was a stage full, what was it, over 100 musicians and dancers on stage who are all Black, literally giving us a visual of her Black community behind her for the entirety of her set, is how we start to really push and move along that vector.
Rodney Carmichael, do you figure that this set, this performance that she does, is it a one-off? Does it get incorporated into her shows from here on out? How does that work?
I don't know. In terms of the band piece, I would love to see that, you know, become something that she does more frequently. But, you know, she's been giving us amazing performances for a good while now. You know, I wouldn't discount that the next one would be just as incredible and you know, resonating in Black culture as much as the one before it. I mean, she's been on a serious role in terms of expressing, you know, different layers of Blackness, of Southerness, as you know, the piece that we read, and what was the publication again, Federa?
Which one?
Billboard.
Oh. Yeah, Billboard, exactly. You know, it was such a great piece in terms of talking about Southern Blackness. And so, yeah, I'm sure that whatever she brings next time will be equally incredible.
Hmm. One little footnote to all of this is that the R&B singer Janelle Monáe's visual album Dirty Computer is coming out next week. And let's listen briefly to one of the singles. This is Make Me Feel.
That's just the way you make me feel. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
Uh-huh. So good, so good, so good, so real. Uh-huh. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
I feel like I'm about to hear It's in His Kiss. Rodney, what are we expecting from Janelle Monáe here? She's calling this an emotion picture.
Yeah, this is really about to be amazing, I think. There's a great piece in New York Times Magazine that talks about how, you know, for so much of her career, she's kind of, in a lot of ways, constructed this alter ego in order to express, but in some ways hide behind, you know, in terms of her identity or a lot of the things that she wanted to talk about. And I think we're going to see her full-fledged talking about a lot of that stuff, you know, whether it's LGBTQ, you know, queerness and all of that, and just embracing it in a way that is really in line with what a lot of artists that we're celebrating right now are doing.
And I totally mangled the Prince lyric right there, but that's what I meant to say. It just sounds so much like his song Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Federa?
Oh, I'm excited about this. I think the fact that she's calling it an emotional picture is significant because she's built so much of her persona around Android, being an Android Cindy Mayweather as her alter ego. And I think that has been, she's obviously had tremendous success, but I think, you know, that could be a block for people because people kind of wanted to wrap their arms around her in a certain kind of way and feel like they knew her. And she talks about that in that New York Times piece. Jenna Worthen did a great job with that. And even in that piece, you feel like you're literally let inside her space a little bit more than we ever have been. And so I'm excited. As someone who's been following Janelle Monáe for years, I'm really excited that she is letting us in and letting us see more of her.
Well, it's been so much fun to go out on the week and on point with some music from Janelle Monáe, Beyoncé, and Kendrick Lamar. Thanks to both of you for being with us. Rodney Carmichael, NPR Music's hip-hop correspondent. Rodney, thanks again.
Thank you, Melissa.
And Federa Hadley, a writer and professor of ethnomusicology at Oberlin College. You can find a link to her article for Billboard on Beyoncé's Coachella set, that epic set, at our website, onpointradio.org. And Federa, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. We're going out with Humble from Kendrick Lamar's Pulitzer Prize-winning album, Damn. I'm Melissa Block. This is On Point.
We like to keep it on the high note. It's levels to it, you and I know. Tell them be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down, be humble, sit down, be humble, sit down, be humble, sit down, be humble, sit down, who that thinking that he frontin' on that man, get the off my stage, I'm the same man, get the off my, that ain't right, I make a play blowing up your whole life.
sick and tired of the Photoshop.